Sleeper Wire, the only fantasy football radio show with more than a dozen multi-time, multi-league, multi-year champions. Listen to the Sleeper Wire show every Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Dash Talk.
Welcome, everybody. I am here for a very special episode of the Sleeper Wire show. Normally, you hear us talk about fantasy football. We have a lot of fun and entertain you. But today, we want to deliver a really strong message to you guys because we have told you about our dear friend Rob, who has helped us along the Sleeper Wire journey from day one. And unfortunately, he's dealing with chronic Lyme disease. We've told you all about his GoFundMe page, so go help him, get him money he needs for the treatments he needs. And you know, we've been trying our hardest to get you guys to go there and help as much as you can. But today, we want to deliver to you the story of what Rob's been going through. So we have a very special guest on with us now. This is Rob's dad, Rob Sr. Rob, thank you for being on the show today. How are you?
Thanks for having me. Doing okay.
That's good, good. And how's Rob doing right now?
You know, it's just been a struggle. Yeah. We're on a downhill slide. He's been sick for a really, really long time. And, you know, the good days are few and far between.
Yeah, you know, so here's the thing. I mean, we've mentioned Rob before. We've had Rob on for a short interview before. But, you know, we've also been doing this now for about 3 years. So maybe there's some people who might have just found out about Sleeper Wire and what we do, you know, what our goal is here, other than, of course, talking about fantasy football. So, you know, I'd really like to have you tell a story of what happened with Rob. How did he come about with Lyme disease?
Well, back in the late 80s, I took a job in Connecticut for a company and moved the family back there. We were actually in Massachusetts for a year and then in Connecticut from 89 to 93. And two summers in a row, back then he was 9, 10, 11 years old, two summers in a row, unbeknownst to us, he got bit in the head by a tick. He was just out in the trees and bushes with his buddies playing army and stuff and pulled a bug out of his head and kept playing, never told us. And so we had no idea. And this isn't the correct term, but it was kind of like it was like dormant in him or something. Like he had some symptoms, but it was like he was a carrier without symptoms. Although I said that in front of him a year ago or something, he says, "What are you talking about? I had symptoms. I just didn't know what they were." He was getting sick in the morning and things, but he just thought that was life. So he never said anything to us. And you know, kids have that problem because they didn't eat enough or they need to eat in the morning and their stomach's bugging them. But so anyway, we lived there until 1993, and flash forward to, we moved back to Denver in 93. And, in 2004, he was working with me and we were doing a project downtown and he had went to, ride with a friend to a shopping mall here called Southwest Plaza. And, he was in the passenger seat and they were turning left in, you know, on a light and an arrow into the, shopping center. And an elderly lady ran a red light and broadsided him on Rob's side. Mm. And he had a bruised kidney and some neck injuries and things like that. And so trying to recover from that. And then all of a sudden, 2, 3 months, 4 months later, he started getting sick, and we had no idea. We didn't know what it was. And so we went to doctors and went to a special blood doctor, and he couldn't see anything. He noticed that his red blood cells were kind of stacking like coins, but he didn't have any idea. And Lyme is so hard to diagnose that even the best tests can be false. And really the only test right now, the best test, is a Western blot. And there's a company called Igenix that, there's people coming up with new ones that they're trying, but that's been the best. And so anyway, we went on. We didn't know what was wrong with him. That was in 2004, and we suffered through him being sick and having problems, not like now, but still having problems for another three and a half years. And I lost a $90,000 a year job in the start of 2007, end of 2006. And so my best friend, Steve Arndt, who also has Lyme but caught it quicker, except for he has to be careful if he tries to burn the candle at both ends too much, you know, stay up too late, work too hard, all that kind of stuff. He can go down for a month or something and have to do some treatment. But other than that, he has a fairly normal life. But he had found a job and said, hey, you need to make some money. Come out here to Connecticut. You can run this job for me, and you can stay with me. Bring Rob. We'll figure this out and whatever. So we were out there and had been there a couple of weeks, and he came up to me off to the side and said, I know what's wrong with Rob. I said, great. What is it? You know, and he said, well, it's not really great. I mean, it's good to know what it is, but he said, I'm pretty sure he has Lyme disease. And his doctor at the time, one of the foremost doctors, is Dr. Horowitz. And he said, you know, Dr. Horowitz isn't seeing anybody, but I'll get him in there anyway. So we got in there in the next week and ran the tests, and he came back positive on like six of the seven strains that they used to compare. Because the test, how the test works is you can't find the little suckers called spirochetes that are actually the organism in you, but you can find the antibodies that are fighting them. So mm-hmm. That's how they determine if you've got it. And the reason why Igenix is better than, say, Quest is because Igenix has more strains to compare to, and Quests are older and from what I was told are from like the UK. So we started on a journey of treatment. I cashed in life insurance, life savings, all that kind of stuff. And over the next, he was diagnosed, we were given the diagnosis on like January 7th of 2008. So we started all the antibiotic treatments that were recommended back then. We were doing it ourselves. Rob learned how to change the bags and clean his, he had a PICC line, which was, goes in kind of under your elbow, and you got to get the antibiotic straight to the top of the heart, the superior vena cava. So in the beginning, he had a PICC line. We did that for about a year, and it broke up into it inside him, and we could have lost him there. It was terrible. And then we did what they call a Groshon, which is a tube in your chest. But we had a nurse come and taught him how to do all the flushing and changeovers, and we were doing it ourselves to save money. But that being said, over the course of the next 4 or 5 years, we went through $350,000, almost $400,000. Wow. We were spending $4,000 to $8,000 a month on antibiotics. Nothing ever helped him. He said that if he felt anything, the very first month he might have felt better. That was the only month that Medicaid paid. They wouldn't pay for anything else outside of that. And the reason is, you know, the Infectious Disease Society of America wrote some guidelines in 2006 that said, yes, there's Lyme disease, but 2 to 4 weeks of doxycycline, which is an oral pill just about like, you know, it's stronger than penicillin. It's in that family of antibiotics. And 2 to 4 weeks of that and you're cured, and anything else after that is in your head. Now, they put that in a little bit more of a scientific term, but that's the layman's terms for people to understand. If you got problems after that, you're, you know, it's in your head, which I'm going through this every day. So and most people tell you it's not.
Well, and Rob, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to know, when you say that, what they wrote down there, it's all in your head. Can you maybe tell some of our listeners, who maybe have heard of this, where they, or think could be in your head? Tell me what some of Rob's symptoms have been, especially as of late. I know his we haven't really heard much from Rob because his symptoms have gotten even more severe.
Yeah. There's a lot of things, but the main ones are severe exhaustion, severe pain. One of his main things is he starts throwing up and can't stop. So we end up going into the ER, and we go in and get fluids, and he takes a lot of pain meds. So when he can't keep anything down, then as a side note, then he's in withdrawal because he can't keep any pain meds down. So that's making him sick too. So we end up going in for anywhere from 3 to 5 hours, and we do IVs to put fluids back in him, and they do IV pain meds to get him stabilized, and we go home. And he usually, is okay and recovers, and we go on and we wait for the next bout, and we just try and, go from there. Now he has flu-like symptoms is what that is. Some depression, malaise, he's got arthritis type stuff going on, but not like some people. Some people get really bad. Memory and focus really bad. I mean, he's an unbelievable computer graphic designer, but he can't hardly do any of it anymore. And you guys know that because he was trying to help you with that.
Sure.
And I mean, he's done things. He's worked with people in Sweden and Denmark, and he did some stuff on Sony, and he did, he should be making buku bucks, having a great life. He wanted to have a family and have kids, and that's not going to happen. And so,
and how old is Rob right now?
Rob turned 36 in July, first part of July, July 5th.
Okay.
So he was born the day after, 4th of July. So, and that was after a severe pop bottle rocket fight he and his mom and I had the night before. So we've gone, we've tried nearly everything. We've seen Dr. Horowitz. We've seen Dr. Jemczyk. If you've ever heard of or seen, or if any of your viewers want to see it, I think can be a one-time pain. You can actually see it online. It's called Under Our Skin. And, I know the director and producer and the guy that did it, Andy Abrams Wilson. I was at the, Manhattan premiere for that. I know a lot. I'm involved with a lot of people, and not as much, but my friend Steve has really dialed in. So we share a lot of information. Also, Dr. Martz, who was in the movie, his PA, he's from Colorado Springs here. And so when we left New York and came back, we did some treatments. He lived with my mom for a while I was finishing a project in a little town on the Western Slope. And through Dr. Horowitz, the doctor we had there, we were doing the treatments. And then he moved to Denver with me. And we had PA Mindy Gooden was doing some of his stuff, but nothing helped. And so you get to a point where, you run out of money. And here's the thing. There's well over 6 million people, conservatively, in the United States, I'm not talking worldwide, have this disease. And I talk to many people, they don't have any money. And they can't get anybody to pay for anything. And they can't get even family members to believe they're sick. It's like Rob's mother's side, the grandpa and the grandma. They don't really believe he's sick, because you look at a Lyme disease, a person with Lyme disease, and they don't necessarily look sick. I mean, it's not like somebody that's got a broken arm or lesions on their skin or... Sure. A huge scar on their chest or bleed, you just look at him and go, you don't look so bad. And
I can relate. My older sister has lupus. So it's a disease that's that's very similar. Yeah, I mean, you look at them and
lupus
you go,
is
oh,
actually really close to Lyme. It really is. And you just don't know. And so, like, you know, we couldn't get any help from them. It's like his grandmother lives in Springfield, Missouri. You know, her doctor's a country doc, and she talked to him, and he said, oh, there's nothing to Lyme. There's probably nothing wrong with him. If he took his antibiotics, he should be fine. He's probably just, you know, like in the movie, he's probably just trying to get attention, you know, or something like that. And so to this day, I mean, those are family members that have money that could have helped that didn't. And, I mean, my mom spent $50,000 of a meager retirement she had helping medication, food, living expenses, you know, because he can't work. I mean, he's in bed 20 to 24 hours a day. And if he's not, he's in the recliner, you know. And so anyway, I get one of the things I really wanted to get across that's not happening. And you know, that's kind of the way it is with Rob. I mean, it's worse and worse. He's in more pain. Nothing's working. We do have a plan. We have a treatment we're going to start in about 2 weeks. Judith probably knows about it, but we're going to do low-dose immune therapy with Dr. Ty Vincent. He was in Alaska. He's now in Hawaii. And he basically developed it for Lyme and associated diseases. Rob also has, he's lucky. He doesn't have like five or six like some people. I mean, because when you get bit by a tick, you can have Lyme, you can have Babesia, you can have Ehrlichiosis, you can have cat scratch fever, you can have Bartonella, and probably two or three others that Judith will remember and bring up when I get done. But Rob has Lyme, and he has Babesia duncani, which is a rare form of Babesia that's incurable also. So Dr. Vincent helped create or whatever the Lyme antigen that a lot of people are starting to use. And basically it's the cool thing about it is it's fairly affordable. I mean, if you go into a regular Lyme doctor, like we went in to see Dr. Jemsek, it was $1,350 to walk in and sit down at the office up front. That didn't include any medication, anything. It was $1,350 to go in and talk to him. Back in the beginning with Dr. Horowitz, it was like $900. That's before you get any help.
Right.
And you know, and there's people that they don't even have that money to figure it out. And so anyway, we get, you know, Dr. Horowitz, Dr. Jemsek, we, you know, we've done everything from diet. We've done organics. We've done everything. So we're down to LDI. And LDI is basically what it does is these antigens go in there and they help to strengthen the immune system, because what happens with Lyme, you know, we all have illnesses in us that we don't know about, but our immune system keeps them at bay.
Sure.
So what happens, you get Lyme, you get bit, and then you start getting these other diseases and it overwhelms it and it can't handle it or it rejects it. And what the antigens do is they go in there, they actually, this is kind of a layman's way to explain it, but they teach the immune system to not freak out, to not overreact. And, you know, and also help the immune system to strengthen and that kind of stuff. And so the deal with that is, and if anybody ends up listening or they know somebody that is looking for something to try, the Dr. Vincent's in Hawaii, but you don't have to go see him. He will do a Skype consult. The price is now $600. And then he'll send you the doses. And the doses are 150 at this point, but a dose is to last you 6, 7, 8 weeks. So it's not like you've got to pay 150 a day or whatever. It's, you know, it's about 150, you know, $300, you know, every couple months. And what it's supposed to do is it kind of works on an accumulative effect, although it hasn't been totally proven out yet. That the theory was they were going to get to where you only had to do a dose or two a year, maybe. But they haven't gotten there because there's been some patients that actually needed more. But they still feel good. You know, I have a really close friend that was really bad for 8 years, like Rob. And after 9 months, he told me he felt like 80%, which, like Robbie says to me, if I could get to 50%, Dad, that would feel like 100 to me.
You know? That's, yeah. I mean, that's incredible.
You know?
And, you know, yeah. and we certainly hope that that works. But let me introduce our other guest on the line here. We have Judith Wieg, president of Global Lyme Disease United Coalition. Judith, thank you so much for holding and for us listening to Rob's story on Rob Jr. How are you today?
Well, thank you for bringing this subject to, you know, the public's attention. I've been ill 24 years, and I have been handling over 300,000 patients myself through these years, as far as trying to guide them, direct them, get doctors educated, and to educate each person coming through this door, you know, by email, telephone, by whatever means. And this is a very tragic disease. For one thing, I lived in the East for 20 years, and I returned home when I became ill, and I moved from a sort of cosmopolitan town in Iowa to a tiny town, and population 12,000. Mm-hmm. In this little town, there have been 11 deaths from Lyme disease. Wow. It's beyond my comprehension as to the number of deaths I've seen through the years. And I think it's outrageous. The problem is, just as Rob Sr. was saying, basically there's a war going on between the Infectious Diseases Society of America and our thinking in the Lyme world, and Centers for Disease Control. I was once a health educator with CDC, and that was during the AIDS era. Everybody was very concerned in the meetings and wanted to do whatever they could for AIDS patients, the studies, and so on. However, here we're in the Lyme, the new epidemic, which is Lyme disease, and we are being mocked, told it's in our heads, actually extremely mistreated. No patient I know of who's gone to a hospital has gotten treated correctly. Our doctors are attacked. Often they're sued for millions just for treating Lyme. This is a horrific political situation right now. And this is why Rob Jr. is having so much trouble finding treatment and proper care. Our doctors have to charge a great deal because they're sued so much. They're risking their livelihood to treat Lyme. So I don't think this is something eventually I'm working in a political arena to change all this. And I actually have been for many years. But we're in the middle of this still, where we're fighting, you know, the powers that be who are, you know, not doing the right thing by our patients. And there's so much misinformation out there. This is why Rob Jr., you know, had to go probably from doctor to doctor to find out what was wrong with him. And, you know, there are different geographic areas for different types of Lyme disease. You know, the strength, the bacteria load, the viral load. Like in the East, there was an island called Plum Island. Yes. Where there are a lot of studies done, and I'm not going to talk too much about that, but it was right off the coast of Connecticut and Long Island, in New York. And I analyzed what was going on there. I had many friends who retired from there and kind of gave me the scoop on what was being studied. And it, of course, it was using ticks as germ warfare. And some of these ticks, you know, got out of the, they let cattle with the ticks on them be out in the open on the island. And of course, birds could pick up the ticks from the animals or that fell off into the grass. And all of this was flown in by birds. Even deer came in from the island and dropped these ticks on that coastal area. And I don't think most people realize that ticks are not just in tall grasses. They can be in beach sand. So all of these, you know, the public's at the beach, and many are getting this horrific illness. It's called Lyme disease because so many in the town of Lyme, Connecticut, developed this flu-like illness, you know, with all these terrible symptoms. And so there's a whole circle of trouble around this illness. The other part of this is that there are co-infections that go along with Lyme disease. Someone can have just Lyme disease, but if you have the co-infections, like Babesia, it's very similar to malaria. Bartonella causes extreme brain problems, and Bartonella often is carried by fleas. You know, it's not just the tick carrying Lyme and, you know, all the co-infections. There's Ehrlichia, Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, Tularemia, and some of these co-infections can kill a person rather quickly. One thing, back to what carries Lyme disease and the co-infections, it can be mosquitoes, which was published at Iowa State through the entomology department, spiders, some versions of spiders, biting flies, and some little kids which are on animals at times. So it's not just the tick. And the biggest problem that drives me crazy is that everybody is saying in print that it's the deer tick that passes Lyme. Mm-hmm. The deer tick is a black-legged tick, and every species of tick can pass Lyme. You have a tick on you, you're capable of getting Lyme disease. So I was very interested in the Rob's story. One thing, he was right about Igenics Labs. They do a very good job of detecting Lyme disease. And I'm going to give their phone number if anybody would like to order a kit. It's 1-800-832-3200. The problem with not knowing if you have Lyme disease is that it hits you in phases. And often the actual patient who has it, it can attack the brain quickly, and then the patient can't think correctly. So you need family members around you to try to take over and get you to doctors.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but yes. I had a question because in relation to Rob's story, you know, Rob Sr. mentioned that back in early 2000s, he got into a car accident, which, you know, he suffered neck injury and a bruised kidney and other injuries like that. And that was about the time where things started to get triggered as far as Lyme disease is concerned. Is this something that's similar in other cases you've dealt with, where somebody goes through either a serious illness or an accident or something like that that will trigger the Lyme disease that could have been dormant?
Well, this is common, but I would say it's only maybe 15% of the cases. Okay. Usually it can be either way. You know, the tick bite itself can be so virulent that, you know, all those symptoms show up right away. But many have had surgery or a car accident or a divorce, something that, you know, lowers the immune system. And all of a sudden they have Lyme disease. And they don't, many people don't, aren't aware that they've been bitten by a tick. So, you know, that ties in with a lot of things. That's the other issue. Often it's the nymph, the tiny little tick that is going to pass Lyme disease, and it can be the size of a freckle.
Of course.
So you don't often see the tick.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, with Rob here, you know, with his story, you know, and with what Rob Sr. just said, too, about what their next treatment they're going to try, do you have any thoughts on this treatment as far as maybe it's a success or what you've heard with other cases?
Well, it's rather recent, and I've only heard about a few cases, and with some it's doing the right thing, and others it may not be. We're at the infancy stage of research because of the IDSA and CDC, you know, kind of trying to thwart everything,
right.
Which means there's no grant money awarded very easily to our cause because they don't think it really exists. And I think, in my opinion, I would try anything like Dr. Horowitz is saying, is viable. I would go ahead and try and see. One thing I do know, I believe more in stem cell, surgery, helping Lyme patients, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
I'm about to send research money to a top university where they're going to be working on that. I think we have to be careful as consumers and patients because when it's like we're in the Wild West, you know, in the 1800s where there were shootouts. Everybody, you know, can open up a practice and say they can treat Lyme and they have the best thing on earth and it's $1 million. So everybody rushes to these things. I always say, only listen to your Lyme literate doctor, and you can, to find out if something's legitimate, you can call our organization or there are other great organizations in the U.S. and Europe and so on, and we can guide. Because, like, someone, I pretty much, 24 years of dealing with all these patients, you know, I know what's going on out there, plus dealing with the doctors. So get a second opinion from your family doc, the doctor who treats Lyme, and from someone who's leading one of the large groups in the country. Don't just fly into it. You have to know about the success from other patients. And many things, honestly, along this path have been dangerous. And I point blank will say that to a patient who, you know, I say, you know, talk to your doctor, but there be a wise consumer and don't do anything to harm the patient further.
One question I had for you is that, you know, it's first off, I want to say, I mean, I think it's great what you guys are doing at the Lyme Disease United Coalition, trying to help direct these patients that need treatments that don't even know where to start. But in a case right. like Rob's, where they've gone through almost every avenue, it sounds like, in what way can you maybe help them direct them to something else maybe they haven't tried? Or is there anything that maybe you could recommend to Rob that could help them maybe find a different path that they haven't taken yet?
Well, I think they're in good hands. And, you know, with their Lyme treating doctor, and I know him, I respect him highly. And he's written wonderful books. One is Why Can't I Get Better? And that's by Dr. Richard Horowitz. I really follow what he says. And there are many wonderful doctors in this whole movement, amazing doctors. But I would suggest that he check with a few more people about his Hawaiian treatment. You know, there must be support groups somewhere that, you know, have a dialogue about what's going on. I will check it all out. And usually I will call a doctor and say, so tell me about this. And if I think it's okay and not going to harm a patient, you know, I'll go back to the patient and say, this sounds interesting. Or if I do think it's going to harm a patient, I'll speak the truth and let that patient decide. So my bottom line is to get a patient well and to protect the patient.
Right. Judith, as far as Dr. Vincent, he was in Alaska for a long time, Wasilla, and he's been doing this quite a long time. He is from Hawaii and moved back home. But, I mean, like you said, you've got to go with what you can. I mean, you talked about stem cell, and one of the things, you know, immediately what brought me into the looking at the stem cell was not quite a year ago, my daughter had a baby. And, well, actually, it's been longer than that, but they come to you when you have a baby and they ask you, do you want us to save the umbilical stem cells, the blood stem cells, and all that? My daughter called me and said, Dad, would this help Robbie? And I said, well, I don't know. Well, let me check. So I found a company called StemAid. And they had on their website about treating Lyme. So I called them. And I'm talking, and we're talking about it and everything. And I'm going, well, I have the stem cells. And she goes, what do you mean you have the stem cells? And I said, well, my daughter's going to be giving birth soon, and we'll have umbilical and blood stem cells. And she said, those don't work. And I said, why? She said, they're not strong enough. You have to use embryonic. And I said, okay, what does that mean? She said, that means you can't do it in the United States. You have to go to India. You have to go to Panama. You have to go to Tijuana, which I was told, don't go to Tijuana. So that's the thing that we started looking at was stem cell. And
well, I wouldn't suggest people in the other countries.
Yeah. I also have a friend on Twitter that she just went to Beverly Hills and they bid on a stem cell package, but it's not embryonic. And she had it done and she's in like her third or fourth week. She says she might feel a little bit better, but I'm following her. But we were looking at a cost with airfare, with me having to go with Rob down there, live down there, the time it's going to take us to get him off of the pain meds he's on, because stem cell, you can't do it when you're on the opioids he's on. We were looking at like $80,000 to $85,000, and you know, minimum. And that's when I found out about, you know, LDI. But one of the other things I want to bring up before we kind of, I know we're getting long in the tooth here, but a couple of things I just really want to say it. You know, the government needs to give this disease the same attention that's given to AIDS, recently Ebola, West Nile, Zika. I mean, like, we don't even hear about Zika anymore. Look at all the money. I mean, when Ebola broke out, they appropriated $1.7 billion for Ebola. They found a cure for Ebola.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are with Lyme disease. Nobody's looking at this. So, you know, the people out there, anybody wants to write their congressman, anybody wants to write their senators, anybody they can think of, you know, it's it's important. We're battling. You know, I'd almost rather see money donated go to lawyers to battle the IDSA and the CDC and the NIH. I mean, I have a nephew that works for the CDC, and he's sick over it. Here's his cousin, and he knows what they're doing. And my nephew is the head of the commission, or one of the heads of the commission that's studying the effects of 9/11 to the first responders. These people are sick and dying also. And, you know, we until we beat this, I mean, the other thing that happened is years ago they passed a resolution or whatever that allowed doctors, researchers, universities to patent parts of organisms. Since they did that, this has affected Lyme disease because it's affected the researchers on what they can do, what they can test, and what they can't test.
We're dealing with CDC and IDSA, especially CDC. They can patent, you know, for instance, a new vaccine is coming out. They patent the vaccine, and they're making money on this vaccine. This should be against the law, because
absolutely,
no governmental agency should profit from anything that goes out to the medical world. And so therefore, you know, this is truly a very unusual situation. I mean, in a way, it's a violation, an antitrust violation. And we are, you know, laying on, you know, dying while they're walking off with this money for something that will harm Americans. So there's a lot going on politically that I really can't talk about here, but I want you, Rob, to have hope because things will change pretty quickly. This has all moved very slowly. So just have hope. And honestly, I do recall talking to Dr. Vincent in Alaska ages ago, and I thought he was a great doctor. So I think I'm sure he's come up with something good.
Well, the people that have actually had success, and I'll give you a prime example, are the people with money. Yolanda Foster, who was on Housewives of Beverly Hills. I started watching because I heard about her. This lady has all the money she needs. She's been to 19 countries, 200 doctors. She had in her house in Malibu, she has a treatment room with a hospital bed and a male nurse that gives her. She developed her own antigens for LDI. And supposedly she's in, and I never heard anybody use the word remission for Lyme, but that's what she called it. And she and I communicate on Twitter. I haven't talked to her for a while, but her two daughters are two of the top runway models in the world. And one of the daughters and her son, they both have Lyme. But they're out doing everything, so they must be getting what they need. But the rest of us that don't have millions of dollars and don't have the ability to run around, I mean, it's all down to money now. I mean, it's all down to money.
I think it can be, Rob, but I also want the listening public to know that I have some doctors, you know, who have been trained who are not asking for, you know, massive amounts of money, and they're treating Lyme patients very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do think, though, to try anything new, like you're going to do with your son, it's massive amounts of money, yes. And, you know, the minute CDC and IDSA quit, you know, fighting this issue, then we can go back to insurance covering our illness, the medications not being $1,700 a bottle. You know, what we're going through is I don't want to say Holocaust exactly, but it is unconscionable.
Similar.
It's like Tuskegee all over again. I'm really appalled at what I've seen through the years. And I honestly, I've seen so much death from this that, you know, I hold that in my heart all the time. Anybody who's passed from this, I cannot believe we are sitting here having a patient die because two governmental agencies want to downplay what this is all about, you know, and people are going to family practice doctors and they kind of laugh that you have Lyme or they need to go to a normal psychiatrist. The psychiatrist, you know, I have cases all over where the psychiatrist laughs about things. Once this goes into the brain badly, you cannot imagine what can happen. I mean, I've had people who have been, you know, put into psychiatric hospitals. They've done, you know, one person shot someone because it was in their brain. You know, we have this tale, this saga will be known as in the future when it's totally, you know, uncovered, will be one of the biggest scandals of American history in medicine. It's unbelievable.
Well, how serious it is for me is I, every day, nearly every day when I leave, I think to myself, is he going to be alive when I come back? Because it's not actually just Lyme. Lyme puts you in a position to where you're more susceptible to strokes, heart attacks, and things like that. And, you know, sure. I don't have a negative thought, but, you know, I could come home and maybe because I wasn't here, I couldn't help him. And, you know, it's just really sad. And there's people worse. I mean, Robbie and I talk about it all the time. You know what? As bad as it is for us, I mean, we know of a lady that's living in her sister's unfinished basement. This lady sleeps 48 hours straight. She's so sick. She can't get help. And her family's ready to kick her out because they don't even think she's sick. So wow. That's how terrible it is, you know?
Well, I'm trying to raise money. I did open a homeless shelter at one time for Lyme patients, but I had to shut it because it was not managed correctly. I am trying to create hospitals and, you know, homeless shelters again in the future. We don't have anything that other illness groups have. And a large part of it is the money because, you know, the AIDS epidemic, you know, everybody's open to donating to that cause now because it's, you know, accepted as an illness and they have, you know, nursing homes just for AIDS patients and so on. We have nothing, absolutely nothing. And I've been trying, but the other issue is raising money. You know, if you have something the government says doesn't really exist, then
nobody
how do you raise
help.
Money? Yeah. Yeah.
Right. The other thing that Steve said to me that was really important, and he said, really, Lyme and the associated diseases, this whole thing with ticks, it needs to be given Manhattan Project-like priority. And that's the big picture, and it's not getting it.
Absolutely.
Right. So,
this will be one of the biggest black marks on America, I think, for many years to come. We gave pressure to CDC, and they said there were, you know, 30,000 cases. That went on for a long time. Then with new pressure, they came up with 300,000 cases, which is crazy. You know,
that's a yearly figure
now. Yes. And this is an epidemic. It's in every single state. It's in Canada, South America. I get calls from Russia. every country in the world, Japan. This is a global problem. And, you know, we've got to do something about it. This is, you know, Rome is burning and we're doing nothing. Mm-hmm. As a nation, our politicians need to wake up. Something has to happen here.
You know, I'd really like to thank both of you for coming on today's show. Unfortunately, we've hit our mark for time, but
think we covered it. Don't you do it?
I think you guys did a phenomenal job bringing awareness to this, you know, horrific disease, and the way it's been treated has been horrible. And I so appreciate you guys bringing it to not only my attention, but to our entire listening audience's attention. And I certainly hope that everybody who does listen to this, you know, does spread the word about this particular episode of our show, because it could, you know, the more people this reaches, the more awareness I think will be raised out there because of all the information you guys have brought on today's show. You know, Judith, I appreciate you coming on talking about Global Lyme Disease United Coalition and telling us all about the issues that politically Lyme disease is going through. And I really hope that the fight, you know, I hope that you guys win the fight against the CDC and against infectious diseases. And Rob, yes, I think so. I mean, it just, you have to figure it has to be over at some point soon. And Rob, again, you know, we always, we love your son. You know, he is a dear friend to us. And we really do try to do whatever we can for him and of course your family. So we thank you again for coming on, sharing his story and spending some time with us today.
I was going to say on a lighter note to get something about fantasy football. After yesterday, if you hold any Denver Broncos, I'd drop them.
There you go. That's a tidbit from Rob Sr. for fantasy football. All right. Well, again, Judith, can you let people know where they can reach out to you or Lyme Disease United Coalition?
Yes. I'd prefer emails. We have many people within the organization who help me with everything. And it would be to Lyme, LYME, info, which is short for information, at LDUC.org. And that LDUC stands for Lyme Disease United Coalition.
You know, of course, we always mention that our cause is for Rob and how he deals with chronic Lyme disease. And you know, we, of course, raise awareness for his GoFundMe page, which has his story about what he's dealt with chronic Lyme disease. So we always are raising awareness to this situation. But we really felt like an episode like this needed to be done to really get the message out stronger. Because, you know, some people maybe don't go to the GoFundMe page because maybe they're there just for the fantasy football information. And we really needed to get the message out because we know how much Rob needs our help. And we know, of course, the Lyme disease community itself needs help. So,
right.
So we're very glad that we could do this today. And again, just one last time, a big thank you to both of you for being on today. And for Judith and Rob, I'm Nick Summerall saying so long, everybody. Good night.
Fantasy Football Show will help you win your fantasy football championship. Sleeper Wire, Friday 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Sleeper Wire.